I have a new special guest with me via phone this morning. Marissa Hsu is the Integrated Pest Management Educator for the University of Minnesota Extension, and she has kindly given up her morning on July 8th to talk to us about bugs. Thank you so much, Marissa, for being here this morning.
Excited to be with you, and good morning, Two Harbors.
Yeah. Well, first, I don't think you're from the North Shore, but I believe you've been here recently and actually looking at pests. And so I got to say, pests have definitely gotten a bit of a bad rap this year in that we know the emerald ash borer has just arrived and the mosquitoes have been bad. The black flies have been terrible up the Gunflint Trail and in the Boundary Waters. And people are getting a little bit tired of bugs. However, I know that your message is to help us to keep a cool head about bugs and remember all the good that they do. Do you want to just share with us a little bit about where you started, you know, where you've been on the North Shore, or what your impressions are, or what you're finding for bugs?
Yeah, definitely. So I was up on the North Shore with some of the other statewide horticulture extension educators just before the 4th of July, visiting different farms and community gardens. Black flies are definitely the biggest bug I noticed. I think space net is going to make a permanent home in my extension work bag now. It's definitely a necessity.
Yeah.
But a lot of what I saw was that just the cold, wet spring and the heavy soils you guys have in some parts of the North Shore were really the biggest hindrance. Most of the bugs I were seeing were actually good bugs, the bugs that are happy to see. We should be happy when we see in our yards and in our gardens, because they are kind of our partners in keeping pests down. So that was encouraging.
Right. I was going to say, I mean, I want to learn a little bit from you about, you know, in our garden, like with my kale and some of the greens, you know, sometimes you start to see holes in them and you think bugs. On the other hand, the last thing we want is to have a garden free of bugs. That would certainly not be very natural, which I know pesticides does. And I know you encourage limiting pesticide use.
When I approach bugs, I'm approaching it through this integrated pest management framework. It's kind of jargony. I think of it as more holistic pest management. So thinking about, you know, what are we actually trying to do in our spaces?
Yeah.
It's not reasonable to assume that everything is going to be hole free and perfect. So what are we actually trying to do? Are we trying to harvest something that, you know, tastes good and is edible? Like, cool, that you can still have bugs in your garden and get a good harvest and things can still taste good. Is your goal to have big, beautiful blooms? You can still achieve that with there being some bugs around. We're never going to control, you know, every single pest insect. And a lot of the insects we see in our gardens aren't pests in the first place. It's estimated that there are 5 million species of insects, you know, across all different environments on planet Earth. And of those 5 million, 1-3% somewhere in there are actually pests. So as an extension person, I spend a lot of time talking people down about bugs. You know, we see insects in the garden, but a lot of times they're just bystanders, or maybe they're feeding a little bit, but the plant evolved to be fed on. So you're still going to get flowers or delicious tomatoes or whatever it is you value from that plant.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's a really good way to start. And then I know you've studied specific beneficial pests that are helpful to us. And do you want to just go through some of them? I mean, I have the list in front of me. There's lacewings, minute pirate bugs. Like, some of these have really pretty cool names. I know you've also talked about wasps. So I don't know which one you want to talk about, but they all sound really interesting to me.
Yeah, and I think the public is ready to think a little bit differently about bugs. You know, we've changed how much, I think, the way we think about bees, where maybe 15 years ago we were freaking out about getting stung, but now we realize how important they are. And they're just one of many, many bugs that are really important to keeping, you know, like native ecosystems functioning, but also keeping our garden and our agricultural systems functioning.
Right.
Sometimes we might be familiar with the way these bugs annoy us, but oftentimes they spend a lot of their life being useful. That would be an example of like wasps, where in the fall it's like, I can't eat an ice cream cone outside, or like, God forbid, drink a root beer float because I'm going to get attacked by wasps.
Right.
But wasps spend most of the summer being predators. Most of the wasps I see right now on farms, they are like patrolling kale, cabbage, broccoli, and they're really aggressive hunters of caterpillar pests. They can be really good at helping us keep pests down, even though they also annoy us. But sometimes one of the hard part, I think, about dealing with some of these beneficial bugs is that for part of the season, they're really helpful. And then for part of the season, they are annoying.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
Yeah, another example of that would be multicolored Asian lady beetles. The lady beetles that invade people's homes in the fall spend most of the summer helping farmers not have to use pesticides because they are so good at eating pests. But in the fall, in their native range, they hang out in caves. Not a lot of caves in Minnesota, so they end up in our houses.
Bugs that look like ladybugs, but they flap up and fly? Is that something different?
Yeah, they are ladybugs. They're not native to Minnesota, but they're still ladybugs. They still have a lot of the good habits that all ladybugs have, in that both the adults and the larvae do a really good job eating the eggs of pest insects or eating pests like aphids. So yeah, they are ladybugs. Just because they have a part of their life cycle that annoys us doesn't mean they're not a ladybug.
Right.
So yeah,
that's really good to know, because I have definitely been annoyed by those ladybugs. And so now I know that they actually do some very vital work that I would miss if it was gone.
Yeah, definitely. Every time I'm like, time to break out the vacuum, like I got to vacuum up all these smelly bugs. I'm like, well, they're helping farmers use less pesticides. So like me getting out my vacuuming for 5 minutes, like, is such a small price to pay in my mind for there being less pesticides being used, you know, in the thousands and thousands of acres of soybeans that Minnesota grow.
Right. Right. So now when I see your articles about promoting how to help the beneficial insects be in your garden and in your lawn and in your area, I see some themes. I see the importance of having consistently flowering plants in your outdoor spaces. I see minimize or maybe not have pesticides. And then it says allow at least a low level of pest presence. So like, how do I know, you know, what's a valuable level? I think maybe you already spoke to that a little bit by saying, you know, are you able to get your food and eat it? And I don't know, but is there any other tips you can give about how to nurture in one's own space the right kind of bugs?
Yeah. Well, so the thing about a lot of these beneficial insects is that they like a lot of the same stuff bees like. So if you're already doing stuff for bees, like, you're going to get some of the beneficials anyway. You know, part of their life cycle, they eat pests, but another part, they eat pollen and nectar. So having that pollen and nectar around kind of helps them be present or helps them have something to eat when maybe there aren't pest infestations. And then just, again, approaching your garden with that, I'm never going to be able to get rid of every pest insect. And so maybe if it's at a low level, like, I'm just going to live and let live. And, you know, if you have, you know, a few aphids, but you're still getting the tomatoes you want, the zucchini you want, the kale you want, it's okay to have those few aphids because you're still getting what you want. And that will also allow beneficial insects to be around, and they're really effective at keeping population numbers low. They're good at keeping some of these insects numbers from ballooning out of control. So sometimes if you're using pesticides, you know, when you're only having a few pests, pesticides oftentimes aren't selective in what they kill. They kill all kinds of bugs, both the pests we're trying to target and the beneficial insects we want to be around. And a lot of our pests, they reproduce them really fast, and they're around in the environment in greater numbers. So it's much easier after you've sprayed a pesticide, kind of wiped everything out. It's easy for those pests to come back, but it takes a little bit longer for the beneficial insects to return. So you can actually end up with a bigger pest problem sometimes than if you hadn't sprayed at all.
It sounds like economic sanctions on countries to me. Yeah, are you really targeting who you want to target with that? I mean, that's always a question. I'm a historian, so I always look at that. I always can think about that side of things too, but interesting. Yeah, so do you find yourself, Marissa, ever at odds, or how do you work with, like, I know that we've talked to several scientists on this station working to eradicate invasive species. It's, you know, pretty big news that the dreaded emerald ash borer has now been found in two harbors. Do you feel like this is just a completely different field than yours, or is there some way you interact with bugs that are not beneficial, and how do you change your tactics?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that invasives are so hard to deal with, because they kind of throw this integrated pest management theory into chaos. Like, we had one way where we knew how to manage berries in Minnesota. Then spotted-winged Drosophila shows up, and all that information is kind of thrown out the window because we have this new pest that our plants don't know how to deal with, our native insects don't know how to deal with, so it just spirals out of control. And emerald ash borer is the same way. For a lot of these invasive pests, actually, though, introducing beneficial insects from their native range is actually probably our best hope of dealing with this insect. So In Minnesota, we have what's called a parasitoid wasp. These are small wasps. They're solitary wasps. They're not the kind that is going to harass you in the fall. But what they do to complete their life cycle, instead of having a queen and a hive, is that they live alone and they are seeking out one specific other insect that they've evolved with. In Minnesota, we're looking for wasp species and introducing wasp species that are really co-evolved with the emerald ash borer. And what these wasps do with the emerald ash borer is they're able to smell it. And once they find one, they lay their eggs inside of it. The eggs feed inside the emerald ash borer, kill the emerald ash borer, and then they emerge. The emerald ash borer is dead, and we have more parasitoid wasps that are going to go out and kill more emerald ash borer. This is a really cool group of insects where we have parasitoids that attack emerald ash borer. We're starting to do experiments with parasitoids that attack spotted-winged Drosophila. So these are really nice, beneficial insects. They're oftentimes really, really focused on one other insect, so maybe they're not going to have some of the unintended consequences that something like multicolored Asian lady beetle had when it was introduced to the U.S. So yeah, beneficial insects actually have a really important role to play in figuring out how we're going to deal with these invasive insects that have entered Minnesota.
Yeah, that is one of the most encouraging things I've heard in a long time, because usually when you hear about invasives, you know, you just hear containment, you know, and prevention is the main thing, and then just wipe them out where you can. But to enlist the natural process to do, help you with that, or to actually integrate it, is really a cool thing. So thank you. We're pretty much out of time, Marissa, but is there anything else that you want to make sure to say before we sign out that I forgot to ask you?
I just really always encourage, when people are dealing with bugs in their own garden, like, make sure you get a ID, and then once you have that ID, you can figure out, is this just a bug that is a bystander, or is this something I want to keep an eye on?
Okay.
It's just the time of year where we see people getting really stressed out because they're seeing bugs. But I just always encourage people to try to keep a cool head. You know, we don't make good decisions when we're stressed out. If you go in the air conditioning, do a little research, and then figure out what you want to do with whatever it is you're seeing.
Okay. Yeah, good advice. And what would be a good resource for people online?
The University of Minnesota Yard and Garden Extension page has really good gardener-level info for good bugs, bad bugs, plant diseases, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So
it's a great place to start and get that Minnesota perspective on all the things we see in our state.
Great. I'm going to have you say that again, just because that was a really good site and I want to make sure people get it. The University of Minnesota Extension's Yard and what was that?
Yard and Garden.
Yard and Garden. Great.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much, Marissa. I'm speaking with Marissa Hsu, the Integrated Pest Management Educator at the University of Minnesota Extension. I hope to have you on another time. Thanks, Marissa.
Oh, definitely. Have a great weekend, everybody.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Marissa Hsu.